moment to stretch up and settle in. And let your attention broadly float to whatever restful states are available, with your eyes open or closed. See rest, hear rest, feel rest. Maybe it will mostly be one that's available, maybe two, maybe all three. As you do this, inner and outer see, hear, feel will arise. That's perfectly okay. Totally allow the senses to activate, but your interest, your intentional focus, is on the restful versions. Physical relaxation, emotional peace, the dark or bright of your closed eyes, or looking out but not at things, soft gaze, or listening in a direction where there is no sound, or hearing the absence of mental talk. You can use mental labels or just direct awareness. You can note actively, pouring your attention out, or you can note passively, just letting the rest happen to you. Create another restful state. Perhaps when you see rest, that leads to feel rest, or hear rest. So if a restful state triggers another restful state, then you'll be rested. The rest will take over. It's also possible that active states can trigger restful states. Perhaps when you hear a sound, your body relaxes sometimes. Or when you start thinking, your body relaxes. Or when you hear a sound, it causes mental quiet. So it could happen that the impact of see in, hear in, feel in, or see out, hear out, feel out, could actually create rest sometime. In that case, once again, you're being meditated. The flow of the senses takes you into rest. The flow of the senses becomes your ally. Okay, good. This is focus on rest, broad focus. Now let's go narrow. Let's explore just see rest. With your eyes closed, you could focus just on brightness, or just on the darkness, or the mixture of the two. With your eyes open, you could look out, but with a soft focus, see rest. You can also try it with your eyes half open or a quarter open, just focusing on dark or bright, or the mixture. Okay, good. Now, let's explore the possibility of hear rest. Of course, there are sounds in the environment, but they may cause mental quiet. Or there may be a direction where there is no sound. Or you may be able to listen to the silence behind, within, around the sound. If so, here rest is available. If not, that's okay. You can just focus, go back to see rest or go forward to feel rest. Otherwise, if at this time auditory rest is available, let's narrow the focus to just that for a few minutes. Okay, good. Now let go of that and let's narrow our focus to feel rest, where we started a few days ago. Remember, you can find it whenever the body is still, in your limbs. You can find it in the natural relaxation on the out-breath. You can create it locally by intentionally relaxing body parts. You can create it globally by stretching up and settling in again, as many times as you want. Good. Now, let's go back to broad focus, where we started. See rest, hear rest, feel rest, whatever's available. One restful state may lead to another, in which case the practice becomes very passive. The rest takes over. Or active states, like sounds or images, may trigger restful states, in which case everything just takes you deeper and deeper. If not, then you can look for or create the restful state. Take a more active role. The restful states may be stable and unchanging. If so, good. Let that stabilize you. Take you into a kind of timeless slow motion. Alternatively, the restful states may not be stable. They may flow, become wavy, have vibrations, bubbles, undulation, scintillation, pulsation. If so, good. Let that energy massage you, take you deeper and deeper. Anicca, impermanence. So it's all good. If it's stable and still, be stable and still. If it flows and changes, flow and change. It's all good. Good. Now, if you wish to continue to sit, that's fine, but I invite you to come to a standing position if you wish. Stand in place. That, notice how that will relieve any discomfort in the body. Perhaps making it a little easier to focus on rest. Settle into the standing position, the same way you settled into the seated position. You can have eyes open or closed as you wish.
Stretch up.
Settle in. We're going to practice in a standing posture. This is one of the four traditional postures. Seated, lying down, standing, and walking for formal practice. Decide, would I like to focus broad, like we did at the beginning and end, or would I like to go narrow, just do sea rest, or just ear rest, or just heel rest? We'll practice standing for a few minutes. Whatever appeals to you. Okay, good. If you're standing, now come back to a seated posture. And let's take a few minutes to have some discussions, reports, questions, and so forth. Just want to remind you, I've said it many times, but different techniques work for different people. Even when I'm giving a guidance, if you don't want to do that technique, you don't have to. You can do whatever you want at my retreats in terms of your focus. So now, anything that, yes? Okay, good. So as we do this, I assume by the it, you mean the focus on rest technique specifically. Yes. Are things being released from the subconscious? And the answer is very likely yes. Here's what I mean. The restful states tend to create a kind of openness in consciousness. Or in my language, I would say that the restful states tend to create equanimity. Now, there are many dimensions to equanimity, but one of them is sort of keeping a restful state. It creates a kind of container. Within that container, thoughts come and go, body sensations come and go. And you're in a state of relative non-interference, non-grasping equanimity. Therefore, by definition, things are being released from the deep areas. Whether one is consciously aware of it or not, equanimity plus time equals purification. Now, there's a difference in the Western and Eastern concepts of releasing the subconscious. Because of the influence of people like Freud and other therapists who discovered the subconscious 150 years ago, there's a tendency in the West to think that you have to be aware of specific content in order to release things. But the Buddhist notion is, yes, sometimes specific content, but more significant release takes place in the subconscious itself without you specifically knowing, oh, I'm releasing this, I'm releasing that. You can just sort of taste that things are getting released, a sort of general taste. So the taste of equanimity is the taste of purification. So you may or may not know the specific things. Then you could say, well, how do we know things get released? Well, because when we leave the retreat, we notice life is easier and behavior is better as spontaneous. So we can assume that something got rewired without us necessarily even knowing what it was. So the quick answer is yes. The restful states do help release blockages in the sense that they create a container of equanimity, and then we let time pass. Yes, way in the back. Okay, two significant things. From time to time, I get this sense that I'm asleep, but I'm conscious. and it's very delicious. That was the first point. The second point is, I'm sometimes aware of a kind of spontaneous, gentle movement within the body. So, you're not supposed to look around the room while you're meditating, but if you do, you may discover other people are also having movements. Some of them gentle, some of them sometimes not so gentle. Movements that take place spontaneously as the result of meditation or other practices, there's a name for this in Sanskrit, the classical language of India. And what are they called? Starts with a K. Kleshas are what's getting released. The movements are called kriya. It's the same root as karma. The kr in Sanskrit means an action. So kriyas are movements associated with releases of releasing. And they can take many different forms. It's spelled K-R-I-Y-A. I have a number of extensive talks on YouTube. If you put in Shinzen Yang Kriya, you'll get a whole bunch of YouTube segments. Obviously, the fact that there's a word in Sanskrit for this phenomenon indicates you're not the first person to experience this phenomenon. There's a lot that can be said about it. People often ask, well, what does it mean? Because sometimes it's a little weird. People can have some very strange movements or even violent movements. Or sometimes it's gentle like that. So the first thing that people want to know is, like, why is this happening? Well, the model in this case, and those of you that have meditated in the Ubakin tradition, say with Mr. Goenka, are very familiar with this formulation. The idea is that as things release from the subconscious, they first come up at the most primitive level of conscious, which is body. And then those body sensations cause the body to move. So why it's happening is things are being released. And that's what the word kriya means in Sanskrit. It means a cleansing action. So that's why it's happening. Then the next thing is, well, what to do about it? If you can detect the sensations that underlie the movement and focus on them and open up to them, then the movement will stop because you'll dissipate those forces. However, you may not be able to detect the underlying sensations. In that case, that's okay. Just accept the fact that the body wants to move. People will often ask, well, should I let the body move or should I try to make the body still? My standard response to that is that there's something to learn by actually stopping the kriya. That may help bring the sensation to the surface. However, there's also something to learn by allowing it to happen. So I usually encourage people to explore both sides. That's the executive summary, the sort of basic information you need about kriyas. Now, let's talk about that experience of rest. When it's like you're asleep, but you're still conscious, would you say that in that state, you can still distinguish see rest, hear rest, feel rest? Or is it so deep that you couldn't even make those distinctions? Could not make distinctions. So it's a very deep state of rest. If you enter a state of rest that is so deep that you can no longer make distinctions, but you're not asleep, okay? You haven't lost consciousness, your posture's not wilting, you're not lurching, you're upright, but you're in a state that's so deep that you can't do anything, then do nothing. And there's a description of do nothing. It's one that, it's in the manual. Do nothing. You are being rested. At some point, that restful experience will break up. You'll get pain, you'll start to think, you'll get hungry, there'll be outside sounds. In that case, now once again, the world of distinctions is arising, so you can implement some intentional technique. So, I wanted to look this up on the internet, but since I have a room full of Hebrew speakers, maybe one of you can help me. In Shir HaShirim, there is a line that in English goes, I don't remember the Hebrew, I sleep, but my heart waketh. Anybody got that? Yes, the King James Version of the Bible, yes. In other words, and if one of you, I only need one, would write that out for me in Fus so that I can read it. Is that what you call it?
Yeah.
I can't read the other stuff yet. Give me a few more weeks. give me a little time. I'll memorize that. In Latin, it's ego dormio sed cor meum vigilat. And the Christian monks, the Catholic monks, used to take that as the goal of their meditation. So there you go. Okay. Yes. Excellent.
Sometimes from the inside. But when I
yes. And this is why you'll remember at the very beginning I said every system of meditation has certain strong points and certain weak points. So my system is designed so that everyone can find something that works for them. So for you, it's more like a focus on everything, okay? Where you include everything. Well, that's one of the 29 techniques in here, okay? You can see in the manual, I call it focus on everything. So it's like see out, feel rest. So if that broader approach works for you, then do that. Certainly, I can only teach pieces at a time, and you know we explore, and different things are going to work for different people. But the good thing is that you are discovering something that works for you and that you can do in action in daily life. People often say, well, Shinzen, why don't you teach the breath like every other mindfulness teacher supposedly does? Well, I'm not against it, but I'm interested in each person finding something that they can do while they go about their life that sort of works for them. And since different things are going to work for different people, some people can focus on the breath as they go about their life. But not everyone. So in any event, that's my thinking. So you like a really broad focus. And also you're getting insight. You're getting insight into the natural alternation between activity and rest. This is how nature works. There's not just day, there's night. Okay, there's not just yang, there's yin. There's not just an in-breath, there's also an out-breath. And there's a natural alternation between restful states and active states. At the extreme level, it's an alternation between yesh and bitul, which is spoken of in some of the Jewish forms of meditation. So it's sort of like, go back to the divine nothing, and then the divine nothing polarizes, and self and world arises, okay? And then self and world collapses back. Continuous creation and dissolution. So you're already getting insight into that cycle, at least at some level. That's very powerful for meditation in daily life. If you want to know what a Zen master is, a Zen master is just someone who, as they go about their life, hundreds of times in the day, experiences bitul ayesh and bri'ah yesh me'ay, over and over and over again. So you're already getting insight into that. Or to use, like my teacher Sasaki Roshi, he often would go to Christian monasteries in the United States, and he would say that the goal of spiritual practice is every day to be crucified and resurrected hundreds of times, okay? So he'd use their metaphor. It's the same thing, though, and you're starting to get a little insight into that natural cycle, so that's excellent. Yes, orange.
Yes, sorry. Some seeds.
Yes. So the question is, well, sometimes as I sit, I have these deep experiences, but other times I either encounter resistance to going deeper in the form of fear, or I get all sort of tripped out and excited about the fact that I did go deep and now I'm not deep anymore. Is this essentially a good paraphrase, a repeating of what you said? Well, actually, what you just reported is directly related to what I said to this other gentleman. You're just experiencing the natural cycle. Sometimes you go deep, and it's relative emptiness, relative no self, maybe even real empty, real no self. And then you discover, I'm not deep anymore. I'm either tripped out on the fact that I was deep, or I'm afraid of going deep. Well, guess what? That's natural. That's a return of a self. Now, what we didn't have time to go into it at this retreat, but when the self returns, you can do the focus in technique. Just let it be there. But be clear and open. See in, hear in, feel in. That's how it's coming up. It's thoughts and emotions, whether it's a pleasant self or an unpleasant self. So when the self disappears into rest, flow, or gone, let it happen. That's half of the cycle of nature. But inevitably, a self re-arises in one form or another. Either there's physical, or there's thoughts and emotions, or the sights and sounds impact, and self and world inevitably remanifest. Then what? Well, just let them do that. So that's why I like to teach people how to use windows of opportunity. Going into restful states or flow or vanishing, that's a window of opportunity. However, the return of self, world, time, and space, that's also a window of opportunity. Sasaki Roshi, can we put that book out again?
It's Michal's.
It's Michal's? Okay.
I'm willing to put the book again.
On the eating tables. Okay, very good. So there's a book that is a picture book of the man that you hear me constantly talking about, although you can find him on the internet also. His name is Sasaki Roshi, S-A-S-A-K-I. Roshi in Japanese means Zen master. And a lot of what I teach you, it's interesting, I teach you technique, wise, it's based on Burmese practice. But the underlying philosophy is based on Sasaki Roshi, so it's a Japanese-Burmese fusion practice that you're learning from, okay? It's a Balagan, but not Balagan. It's Pesede, but it's a mixture. Okay, so anyway, Michal brought a book That's a picture book of Sasaki Roshi. So she only asks that you not get it dirty, okay, if it's in the dining hall. That was issued when he was 100 years old, on his 100th birthday. Michal was there, I was there. He gave a two-hour talk. Leonard Cohen, who you may know, who's his student, was there. So anyway, you could see the person I'm talking about, and you could see the source of these ideas. But in any event, Sasaki Roshi says that inevitably a self arises. Inevitably a self disappears. Inevitably the world arises. Inevitably the world disappears. It doesn't matter how enlightened or how deluded. Inevitably this happens. What is the definition of enlightenment? How clear you are about this cycle, and how well you understand what to do in each case. When you go into relative or absolute rest, you know how to rest. When self and world reappear, it could be a happy self, it could be a confused self, it could be a frightened self, it could be an enlightened self. When self reappears, you know what to do. When self reappears, don't fight it. But don't go unconscious. Be aware what part is image, what part is thought, what part is the emotional body. Be aware of how that's changing, flowing. If possible, be aware of how that's being molded by the flow of spirit, until that flow once again flatlines into ayin, efes, shunya, the source. So, share that with you. Okay, we're getting deeper.